It sure is. And we've got Dr. Kimberly Earle with us today. And hopefully you can talk better than I can today.
We'll give it a try.
What have we got today?
Listen, we're going to talk a little bit about weight loss in pets because weight loss is really important, particularly through winter. So, yeah. And then we'll happily take any calls. It is estimated that somewhere between 45 and 60% of our pet dogs in Australia are overweight. And the numbers are harder for cats, but maybe, you know, they're probably similar. Of the pets that I see, cats, it's probably fairly similar. The statistics from America is 65% of dogs and 59% of cats. We're probably not quite that bad, but then it's a little bit hard to say. Nobody's really collecting that data. Mm. And obesity and overweight is as problematic in pets as it is in humans, okay? So we know that if you have a dog who's a lean body weight dog, that on average they will live 2 years longer. You will reduce their incidence of cancer or the cancers that they get, which is, you know, people are often surprised. Cancer is very common in our pets. You'll reduce that incidence or push it out by about 2 years. That we can see diabetes, type 1 and type 2 diabetes in dogs and cats, and that doesn't happen to the same degree if they're in good lean body condition. Particularly overweight cats will get a lot of diabetes. So it's a really important thing. And the reason I was thinking about this topic for today is because it's winter and we're dealing with a lot of patients with arthritis. And I always tell clients that there is no drug on the shelf anywhere that is as good as weight loss for an overweight pet with arthritis, okay? And overweight pets, they struggle. They have a really, really hard time. They can't lift themselves off the bed. They can't, you know, move around as much. And we know that it's cheap to get weight loss on them. It's not easy, but it should be. It's not easy because we're softies at heart and we really want to do the right thing by our pets and we want them to be, you know, to love us, but it is cheap. It's a great solution. So what can we do? Dogs, the first thing I have to tell people is portion control, portion control, portion control. Exercise is absolutely really important, but you will not get weight off your dogs if you don't reduce their portion sizes. And you have to remember that good quality commercial kibbles, pellets, whatever you're feeding your dog is great. It's balanced. I feed it, but it's really calorie dense. There's no moisture content to it. And so per, you know, tablespoon or quarter cup or cup of food, they're getting a really, really high calorie load. And so it's really important that we don't look at it as I need to fill their bowl and in terms of volume, because that amount of calories is way, way excessive for any dog. Okay. Yeah. So that's the first thing. Portion control is really key. The second thing is toppers. People love to put toppers on their dog's foods, right? Most of the time when I ask people, what do you feed their dog? The first thing they say is, well, I put some rice or some pasta and maybe some veggies. And then we've got some lovely chuck steak or a bit of chicken mince, those sorts of things. And that's fine. But carbs, if you've got a dog who's even remotely a little bit overweight, they need no carbs. If your vet tells you that your dog is skinny, absolutely. Add some rice, add some pasta. If your dog is suffering from diarrhea and we're trying to get the stools to firm up, a little bit of rice is great. But as a general day-to-day thing, cut the carbs out. Just like with humans, carbs don't do them any benefit and they're just going to pack the weight on. Raw vegetables or even cooked vegetables have at it. That's not a problem. It's absolutely fine. Lean meat in small portions is fine, but we want to keep it to, like, it really should be a flavoring topper. They should be getting the balance of their food probably from the kibble. And so we need to give a moderate, weighed out every day amount of kibble and then a small amount of toppers. So that's where I would start with dogs.
We'll just go to Lynn and we'll continue with this later.
After.
Yeah, Lynn. Hi, from Shortland. How can we help you?
Oh, I've got a 4-year-old chihuahua and he's about to go mad because I'm walking in the door. He's really round and solid.
Yep.
He's hard. I've had him to the vet. They've done x-rays.
Okay. This is just a sudden change in him, is it?
No, it's been like it for a couple of months now and I just can't figure out what or how.
Yeah.
Just stop
and
him.
Is he eating and toileting pretty normally? Like he's pooping every day and...
He is, but yep. It's only a tiny little bit and it's strained.
Yeah, okay. So he's straining. Is he a de-sexed chihuahua or is he entire still?
No, he's de-sexed.
Great. Okay, good. That's a good place to start. And so you've had some diagnostics done. Has your vet made any recommendations about diet changes, things like that for him?
No, not really. And okay. He doesn't get a lot. He gets three, like I make either chicken or mince cooked. And then there is sweet potato, pumpkin, mm-hmm. potato and carrot all mixed up and in one thing, and they get three dinner tablespoons of it.
Yep. And you're doing that once a day, twice a day?
Once a day, that's their tea of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they might get a schmacko or something
yeah.
like that.
Okay. I mean, it's hard to say without seeing him. And if he's not vomiting and he's just, you know, sort of got that firm, bloated, you know, sort of appearance, it could just be that he's got extra weight, that, you know, he's got some extra weight on him and we need to get some weight off. I would say, as a generalization, I would want to be looking to increase his fiber and decrease the amount of protein and other stuff that he's getting. So keep the vegetables. I'm happy with pumpkin and sweet potato, but I would have you cut out the regular potato and potentially, you know, go lighter on the meat as well. And then think about if he's not getting out some nice bulky stools for you, I would even think about adding maybe just like a quarter teaspoon of a bit of Metamucil powder onto his food just to try to help with some of that insoluble fiber. It'll draw fluids into his bowel and just sort of try to bulk up that. And then he might start to become a little bit more regular. These guys, little Chi-Chis, will also have problems with their anal glands, and it can be very difficult for them sometimes to pass stools comfortably. So I'd have your vet check out his anal glands and just make sure that they're okay. And you know, have a chat with them about, do they think he's in good lean body condition or, you know, or is there something else going on? He's a bit young for some of the conditions that we get really concerned about, bloated tummies like Cushing's disease, but it's not impossible to see that in a young dog as well. And your standard blood testing won't pick that up. You'd have to, you know, there's a special test that we do for that one. So if it's concerning to you, you know, I would go back to your vet and say, I still feel like there's a problem here. What, you know, what should we do? Can we look at something else? Or can you make some dietary, specific to him, dietary recommendations?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck with that, Lynn. All the best.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Okay, next we've got Danny on the line. How can we help, Danny?
Hello. I'm just was wanting to ask about, I've got a five-month-old puppy. He's a bull doodle.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been feeding him kibble since we got him, a premium kibble. It's advanced.
Yep.
And but I've tried to introduce other foods, you know, slowly. But every time I give him something different, he has diarrhea.
Yeah. Listen, that's not uncommon in puppies. And some dogs, you know, will have an iron stomach and other dogs don't. My dog does not have an iron stomach. So she's very much the same. If I give her, you know, much of anything else, she will get a really upset tummy. So first of all, he's just quite a young puppy, still at 5 months old. And there's no problem with just feeding the kibble at this stage. There's lots of extra things that we can add that can be really rich for them, a little bit too rich, and they will get that diarrhea. If you're determined that you want to add extra things, you want to put toppers on, you know, you can, but you might need to literally start at a teaspoon at a time or a tablespoon at a time and do that for, you know, do one tablespoon or one teaspoon even for, you know, 3 to 5 nights in a row, and then, you know, double that to 2 teaspoons and just really slowly work up to it. You could speak to your vet. There's a product which is like a paste that you can give them, which is a probiotic, and it's got a bit of a binder in it, which we use for dogs that have diarrhea. And if your dog has a sensitive tummy, you could feed him that in conjunction with those toppers. But if you're feeding advanced puppy kibble, I mean, that's a great food. There's nothing that you can add that he won't be getting out of that food. It's just that, you know, you're adding a bit of extra variety. But, you know, I do tell people that dogs thrive on a really consistent diet, you know. Rarely
see. I thought perhaps, you know, I'd like to introduce some veggies or something, or you may need something, you know.
He doesn't need anything else. And I mean, you can, people like to add stuff, right? But there's actually advanced kibble will take him all the way through his puppy years. And then you can move him from a puppy food to an adult food. And I can guarantee that there's no way he'll develop any kind of nutrient deficiencies on that. It's an excellent product. And if that's what it takes to keep his tummy happy, then there's no problem with that. You're not doing him any harm. Right. And, you know, if you're a dog, you don't know what you're missing. So he doesn't know that the dog next door is getting, you know, extra veggies or extra chicken meat. So, you know, you don't have to feel bad about that. My dog gets nothing but kibble, except for the odd, she loves a bit of carrot peelings. She loves to have a little bit of the end of a banana. And that's pretty well all she gets. So, because if I give her anything else, even those little doggy safe yogurt drops, she had a couple of those the other day. Somebody in my clinic gave her some. And then she had diarrhea for 48 hours. Yeah. So, like, you know, some dogs it's just have a less. It's not worth it. And they don't care. Like, it's not like the dog is sort of going, oh, my friend's getting this better stuff. Yeah. they don't have that.
Is the kibble salty? Because he seems to drink a lot of water.
It shouldn't be particularly salty, but we were just talking about how it has very little moisture to it. So there's a lot of dry matter there, and they do need to drink a fair bit of water. And dogs can have really variable, water intakes. But we talk about, as a minimum, 3 mils per kilo per hour is the minimum amount we would expect them. So a 10-kilo dog needs to have a minimum of 30 mils per hour. 30 times 20 is 600 mils, plus you need to add another 4. So, like, they need to have 3/4 of a liter as a minimum for a 10-kilo dog, and that's without doing any exercise or any panting or anything like that.
No, he drinks way more than that.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, I mean, some dogs like water, right? My dog will stick her whole face in the water bottle like six times a day just because she thinks it's fun. So, so that's fine. I don't think that there's a concern about that.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Danny. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye. And on the line is Lynn from Fletcher. How can we help you, Lynn?
Yes, good afternoon. I'm just ringing, inquiring. I was just listening to your show and I was just wanting to check to see if I'm doing the right thing for my little pooch.
Sure.
I have a little toy poodle. She's 3 years old. So I had a little bit of trouble with food at the beginning with her, diarrhea and little things like that. She had a very sensitive stomach. So I ended up going to a place and ordering it online. It's called Leica. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, Leica's a reputable brand for sure.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. So she eats that daily. So she loves it. I've got all different flavours that come and get delivered for her. Mm-hmm. But I was just listening to your show and you were saying that you only give your dog kibble and the previous lady only gives kibble.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering whether, am I doing the right thing?
So Leica is what we would still consider, it's a kibble-like food. So it's not kibble in that it's processed slightly differently, but it's like kibble in that it's a completely formulated diet. So everything your dog needs comes in that packet, okay? Leica happens to be, it's an Australian company and it is owned by a veterinarian. And so they are pretty good at making sure that, you know, they're following all the AAFCO guidelines for what dogs needs in various stages of life and things like that. So although it's not a traditional dry kibble food, it is a reputable brand and it is an all-in-one sort of nutrition solution really for your dog. So I don't think there's any problem with that. It's, you know, for a little toy poodle, I think it's a great option. It's quite cost prohibitive if you've got a bigger dog. But it's, you know, for a little dog where, you know, they've only got a tablespoon for a stomach, you know, they're not very big, then there's no dramas with that. So I don't think you have any problem to worry about. There are occasionally people who will make claims that are probably over and above what Leica can, you know, do. They talk about, you know, skin allergies and things like that. And there, we do see dogs that will have food allergies, but they are, you know, in the minority of where we get skin allergies from. And they're certainly not going to fix, you know, every problem that we see, you know, in terms of dental issues and, I don't know, urinary tract stuff, things like that. So, but it's a great food. And if your dog is doing well on it and the stools are normal and the appetite is good, then, you know, don't have to worry that you're doing anything wrong. That's perfect.
Awesome.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Lynn.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye. Now, did you have any other weight loss?
Yeah, well, let's talk about cats, because we do see cats. Cats get a little bit neglected on this show sometimes. So cats can get overweight quite, it sneaks up on you, right? Because cats spend a lot of time sleeping, lying around. They're often a bit more fluffy, you may not feel. And then people come into the vet clinic and it's like, oh, we've just weighed your cat at 6.5 kilos or 7 kilos, or, you know, the biggest cat that we have or have had on our books was about 11.4 kilos.
Ooh, he was a big cat.
He was a big cat. So cats' weight loss is a little bit different, okay? So we want to encourage exercise for cats, 100%. And we actually know that for cats who have arthritis, that being sedentary makes their arthritis worse. So we really think that exercising cats is quite critical. But you can't just put a harness on every cat and just walk them down the road. That's not going to work. So what do we have to do? We have to get them up and moving for their food. And we don't want to overdo it, particularly if you've got an 8-kilo cat. You can't make them jump up onto the washing machine to, you know, get their food. They're not going to be able to do that. But you might be able to get them to jump up onto a chair and then onto a washing machine to get their food that's up on the top. We do things called forage feeding with cats really successfully. It makes a really big difference. So your dry portion of your food that you're feeding with cats, you can hide it in little clumps around the house. That only obviously works if you don't have a dog in the house or potentially a toddler. But cats will become very good at working out. You know, you might go and map out, say, 20 spots that you can say, okay, I could put a little portion of dry food here in a little pile or on a little plate or a little, you know, something like that. I could put a little portion of dry food here and my cat can go and can get to that spot and do it. And so you're then going to say, okay, today it's Monday, we're going to pick 5 or 6 of those spots and we're going to put a bit of food in them. And Tuesday, we're going to pick a different 6 spots. There'll be a little bit of overlap. And what you're doing is you're teaching the cat to do a bit of a route to go through the house. But what you're actually doing is making the cat work for their food and they're getting up and they're moving around. Now people say, oh my gosh, what if we, you know, like forget that there's food there. We don't want ants. We don't want mice. Absolutely. That's why you map it out. You put the food there. You leave it for 45 minutes to 2 hours at most, and then you take it away. And you, the next day, you find another 6 spots. You know, you sort of put it there. I tell people, create a list of all your spots so that you never forget where you're going to put it. Always add, you know, if you found a new great spot, just add it to the bottom of your list so you know to look. And I've had one client who made like a little spreadsheet, randomized, and they laid out things. They did a little map. So that's something that can be really helpful for cats. The other thing that's really critical for cats is that when we have to get weight off of them, we have to feed them some wet food. It can't all be dry food. And I often tell people, you know, if you're feeding a third of your cat's portions as wet food and 60% of it as dry food, we're going to swap that around and we're going to feed them 30% of dry food and 60% as wet food. Because the cats then are getting a nice full belly, but that's metabolizing down to 70 to 75% water. So the calorie density is much lower. If you don't feed cats, if we starve, quote unquote, starve them, you know, if they don't have a nice full belly, they get really annoying and they can, you know, they can yowl and scratch. And I've had some cats that have attacked their owners because they're hungry. But if we feed them a decent portion of a wet food, they'll get that weight in the tummy. They get a bit of stretch in the belly. They feel full, but then they're not getting the calorie density. So for cats, that is really, really critical to increase the portion of wet food that they're getting and decrease the dry. And then use the dry, if at all possible, in a forage feeding technique. There are toys you can get for cats. So if you've got a younger overweight cat, you can get some of these, you know, they look like little mice and you put some of the dry kibble inside them, and then as the cat sort of tosses them around, little bits of kibble and stuff fall out. There's a few different toys like that that work really well, and those would also count as foraging feeding for cats as well. So
good ideas.
Yeah.
Great ideas, actually. Mm. I wonder if that would work for humans. Just put little bits of food around the house.
I'm sure it does. Yeah, you got to walk down. Yeah.
Good way to lose weight and then gain weight by eating.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
This is Pet Chat. We are going to look at our pets of the week, and we've got Jess.
So Jester is a 3-year-old Australian cattle dog looking for his forever home. Now, we apparently, Jester did get adopted, but it was a bit of a false start. And as it turned out, they weren't able to keep him. So he's gone back up for adoption. He's a lovely, cuddly, friendly boy, loves to play fetch, loves to go for walks, loves to ride in the car. He's a great match if you have a nice, active, household, family or individual with older kids. He needs to be in a secure fence. So, like, he needs really stiff, good, high fencing, and he needs to go as an only pet. Although it does say he's been living with a rainbow lorikeet, and he doesn't mind the bird flitting around, but it doesn't sound like he's going to be suitable to go with other dogs or cats. Would be best for somebody who's home frequently or can take him on, take him along on outings, as he does have a little bit of separation anxiety. So, but it says he's excellent in the car, loves hanging out at cafes. So, if you are interested in a dog, you're nice and active family, then and have a look at Jester. And then we have little Riley. So Riley is an 8-year-old male gray and black tortie cat. He's got some white on his tummy and white on his paws. He's a calm and affectionate boy with a really gentle temperament. He does have some stress, anxiety, urinary issues. So they really want him to be adopted to a home that has no other pets, low stress, probably no young kids. Loves to be around people, and he loves to, sort of greet you with meows, head rubs, lots of purring, loves to lie and cuddle on the lounge with you, which is great. He'll need to be on a special prescription diet for those urinary issues. That's really, really critical for these cats. They can go years and years and years without any problems, and then somebody goes, oh, I'll just buy the cheap food this once, and it all goes to heck in a handbasket. So he needs to be on his prescription urinary diet, and he may take a little bit of time to settle into the new environment due to his sort of slightly anxious nature, but that's all right. Looking for an older couple or an only pet household, he is definitely not a candidate for adding into a household, multi-cat household. These cats with ear urinary stress issues really need to be, on their own. Sometimes they'll tolerate a dog, but these guys would, this blurb for him says we really want him to go to an only pet household. So, and he's 8, so he's, middle-aged for a cat, not old, not young. So you probably don't have the, silly kitten-ness, but also he's not an old cat, so we shouldn't be dealing with too much in terms of arthritis or anything like that yet. So a great opportunity there.
Yeah, so if you're interested, you can head to our 2NURFM webpage, 2NURFM.com.au, and you can click on the lifestyle section and you'll find all the
pictures,
pet chats, and the pets of the week. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and we have Anne from Jerry's Plains on the line. Hi, Anne. How can we help you?
Well, I've got a couple of questions. It's not to do with food or anything with the dog. She's quite healthy in that. I've had her for about a year and a half. She's just turned 2 in December, and I've noticed that she's barking a lot, like. She's an indoor dog, and I take her outdoors occasionally, but it's only when people walking past or even cars going past the main road.
Yeah.
But just the last few days, it's been getting to that stage that she just barks and barks.
The last couple of days only?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And what kind of dog is she?
She's a purebred Jack Russell.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, listen, the trouble with barking and dogs is that barking is really normal in dogs, right? It's a normal behavior that's hard for us as humans to tolerate. But she's showing classic, to me at this stage, she's showing classic, this is my house and I'm going to defend it from you. I'm telling you to sort of stay away. And that's why you're seeing that behavior. You've got a person or a car that goes by or another dog that goes by. She's sort of like, hey, you can't come here. This is my place, my territory. It's like a territorial defense sort of thing. Yeah. And it's what we call self-rewarding, right? It's the same thing when the postman comes and drops something at the door. It's self-rewarding because they bark and then the person or the car or the postman moves off and they're like, yes, I win. And so they take that as a positive reinforcement sign. And so it encourages them to keep going and going and going. So assuming that it's a normal behavior and that your dog doesn't have like an overactive, isn't overly anxious and there's no sort of mental health issue there, what we really want to try to do is to distract the dog away from that. We don't want to punish them, but we want to distract them. We want something in the inside of the house to be a stronger pull than the reinforcement that they get for chasing away that car or that person or that postman, okay? So you want to have a little jar of really easy to get to but really yummy treats or a little Ziploc baggie. You can, if you're at home, I like to use a little bit of chopped up Devon or lamb's liver or, you know, some of those doggy treats.
Devon.
She won't eat Devon. What, Jack Russell? What self-respecting Jack Russell won't eat Devon? But there'll be something, a little bit of barbecued chook or something.
Yeah, she won't even touch pork, like cooked pork. She won't even touch that.
And or sometimes they're really motivated by play. So you might have a Jack Russell who's really motivated to chase something, and you might find that you can throw a little ball or throw a little stuffy toy, and that might be more rewarding than actually a food reward. And might be that if something is, you know, you see somebody coming, the ideal situation would be that you preemptively go, okay, I see that there's somebody coming down the road before the dog notices. I'm going to engage them in a game of play or engage them in even a little training session where they're focused on me and they're not focused on what's going on outside. Or sometimes they'll see it, you know, see out of the corner there's a car coming. What the goal is for the dog to sort of say, there's a car coming. I can see the car coming. Let's go look for mom because there might be something fun happening if I go and look for mom. So that they're taking the emphasis off of, you know, chasing the car away from the outside and going, when cars walk, you know, drive past or a person walks past, mom will play with me or mom will give me a treat or something really good happens inside the house. It's a long, hard process. It's not easy to do, but it can be done. But it starts with trying to, you know, avoid the dog from getting to practice and really getting a lot of, you know, that endorphin kick of chasing away the cars or chasing away the people. So we've got to try to block that a little bit and then work on trying to gain the dog's attention inside the house.
All right. And I've got another thing. Mm-hmm. I've noticed in the last or maybe 3 days, I could be sitting on the lounge and my feet are on the floor and then she'll come up and she'll just plonk a bottom on my foot.
Oh, I don't know about you, but it's getting pretty cold here in Newcastle. I don't know what Jerry's Plains is like. Your feet are probably warm. I'm not sure. I mean, it could be that there's something else going on in your neighborhood. You know, maybe somebody's doing some new construction or there's a new dog around, and maybe your dog's reactivity in the last few days is increasing because they're hearing something that they haven't heard before. And that might mean that she's feeling a little bit uneasy and looking for a little bit more reassurance. So she's trying to sit real close to you, looking for that little reassurance from you that everything's okay. That might be the other thing that I'd be thinking.
All right. Okay.
Okay. Good luck with it, Anne.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All the best. Now, we're almost out of time, but you had some other things to talk about.
Well, I just wanted to make sure we covered weight loss in rabbits and guinea pigs because we see a lot of overweight rabbits and guinea pigs. And these do tend to be the rabbits and guinea pigs that are eating a lot of the grocery store muesli mix. So if you've ever come to my clinic and had a consult with me or any of my nurses or any of my vets, you will know that we believe the muesli mix for rabbits and guinea pigs is the devil. We don't feed it. We don't recommend it. It kills rabbits. It causes teeth problems. It just doesn't kill rabbits. That's very inflammatory for me to say. But it causes a lot of problems with their gut. It sets them up to get sick down the track. It sets them up for obesity, and it sets them up to have dental problems. So we never, ever, ever recommend feeding it, even as a treat, but they love it. It's like junk food, okay? Except that it's really important in rabbits and guinea pigs that we're feeding the right stuff. So if your vet has told you or you believe you have a fat rabbit, your rabbit's dewlap is hanging on the ground or, you know, you can't see under their tummy when they're hopping because their tummy is sagging, what we need to do is we need to make sure we're feeding lots of hay. Hay, 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 hay. Or guinea pigs too, and grass. Grass is fine. We're happy to have grass. We want to be feeding a small amount of a pellet-only food. And when we talk small, a 1 tablespoon maximum per rabbit per day, unless you have a 3 kilo or heavier rabbit in lean body weight, in which case they get 2 tablespoons a day. Same with guinea pigs. Guinea pigs is a 1 tablespoon per guinea pig per day maximum. if we feed them more than that, they won't eat the hay and they won't eat the grass. And that's where the fiber is coming from. That's the low density food that has slowly digesting properties that's going to keep all their healthy gut bacteria healthy. And that's what we really need. So if you're feeding a lot of concentrate out of a bowl to your rabbit or guinea pig, they will get overweight. They will have lots of other problems. You're setting them up for some real issues there. So we need to go with grass, hay, maybe some fresh leafy greens, okay?
Okay, well, we are just about out of time, and congratulations to Lynn from Shortland. You've won the $50 pet food voucher, and we will be in touch about that. And Dr. Kimberly Earle, we'll see you in a few weeks.
Sounds good.
Chat
Thank
on 2NURFM. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.